We've started a bit late and we're going to try and recoup the time by having shorter breaks in between, but I'm sure it'll all come out fine in the end. Right, I'm Claire Cowan, I'm the chair of Broccoli Society, and I very warmly welcome you to today's event. This is the second Festival of Ideas that we've held. We call it the Broccoli Festival of Ideas, but broccoli is a very elastic term, and it involves the wider broccoli, even as far as Iceland, if necessary. We're organising this conference to stimulate ideas and to have a discussion about things that matter. We're very keen to strengthen our community, to build things up by having these discussions. And we know that today you will hear ideas that you agree with and ideas that you disagree with. We're going to ask you to listen patiently to both. And of course, we're going to ask for respect to all speakers, even those that you may really, really disagree with, because we want to have this discussion, and that is the way we want it to proceed. Now, we had the festival last year. It was a first time that we'd ever done it, and it was an astonishing success that we had not anticipated. We were very pleased about it, but we obviously needed to look at how successful it was, what mistakes we'd made, and we asked for a lot of feedback. So we got feedback on slips from the festival, we got a lot of feedback by email replies after the event, and we also did a lot of other research. We had a meeting afterwards of people who wanted to organise a second festival, and 30 people came, which is not bad. And we did a lot of research as well, both at Lewisham People's Day and at the Hillyfields Fair, saying to people, what are the ideas that worry you? What keeps you awake at night? So out of all that input, we've devised the agenda for today and the way that we run the conference rather differently. So you will have seen on the agendas, which I hope you all have, we have five themes, sessions with five themes. The theme about the Battle of Lewisham arose out of the meeting immediately after the last festival and out of research that we did in the areas and out of the fact that Goldsmiths University had done a whole lot of marking of the 40th anniversary of the Battle of Lewisham. I won't say any more about it because you'll hear all about it later. But that's been a very important experience for those of us who organised this event. The other questions, housing and homelessness, debt, money and exploitation, and food and the environment, arose because these were burning issues that people wanted us to raise. The final part of the day is ideas for action, because we felt it's not any good just to have great ideas. There also has to be some actions and some changes out of it. This is a festival of ideas for change. I want to say briefly about another very different aspect to this year. We have the plenary hall here where the main sessions will take place. But at the end of each session, when everyone's still dying to have discussion, or rather some people are, the discussion will move to a breakout room over there, to continue. So those people who want to continue the discussion can do so, and we've asked the speakers to stay a bit longer. Then the next session will begin in here. We also have a film room, 3-1, well, you'll see the sign. And from 1 o'clock onwards, we've got a very interesting range of films and recordings. So we'll talk about that later, but please have a look at that, because it's a very rich and interesting group of films. And I would also draw your attention to the stalls that we have here. The Mass Photo, this is commercial, you know, shameless commercial promoting. The Mass Photo that we took on Hillyfields in 2015, we're selling it at knockdown prices, 80% off. So have a look at that later. Do look at all the other stalls in the break. Buy your tickets for your lunch. I think that's enough of the sort of thing. But I do have to say the housekeeping, fire escapes. The fire escapes are marked. You can go out of those doors. The best way out is down the green stairs that you came down. There is another staircase there, but you'll get lost in the bowels of the building. Use that one if you can. There are toilets on both sides. I think the ladies' toilet is furthest away on that side. I'm not sure on this side. There is no smoking in the building and no vaping. If you do, it will set off the fire alarm and we will have to leave the building. So that is the end of my opening remarks, and I hope you're going to have a very brilliant day. But now I would like to ask Lewisham's young mayor, Laurel Henry, to speak, just to open the event. She's accompanied by two of her advisors, Rochelle Joseph Brown and Tia Humphrey Davis, and she's going to tell us a bit about being the young mayor of Lewisham. So please give your hands for Laurel Henry.
Morning everyone, my name is Laurel Henry, I'm 14 years old and I go to Setchill School. On Wednesday the 22nd, I will officially be young mayor of Lewisham, and I hope to do a lot of changes for the young people because I feel like Lewisham needs a big change when it comes to the youth, because there's a lot of people, if you go to Lewisham after school or during your break at lunch, you see a lot of school children just doing nothing, just hanging around with their friends. And I want them to feel like they can go somewhere after school, do something productive, like maybe on a Saturday they can all come together and do a sports event or something. So I have a lot of plans and I would like to change Lewisham for the better. But I can't stay long because I have another conference to speak at. But thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and I hope this day goes well for all of you guys. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I think that's about it. So they can escape. And Anna.
Is that the first female mayoress or not?
No. That's very good. No, thank you very much for coming. It's very much appreciated. Thank you all three. Right. And now we'll.
Gosh, how do you beat that? Very well done, Laurel and team. Okay, so I'd like to welcome the session on the Battle of Lewisham 40 years later. I'm Lorna Jackson, who's going to be chairing this session. You're about to hear of a historic event which was in danger of passing into obscurity. We have speakers who were present 40 years ago at the Battle of Lewisham who have done extensive research leading up to this event, to speakers who have looked into how it affects the community today. So we actually did invite Professor Joan Anim Addo to speak, who has written a brilliant book, Longest Journey, A History of Black Lewisham, first published in 1995. Chapter 12 of that book, The Nightmare Years, gives a detailed account of the event and the climate of race relations at that time. You can actually buy a copy of the book at the store that Claire mentioned at the back. Unfortunately, Professor Anim Addo has had to pull out. However, our speakers and performance poet will give you an excellent insight into what happened in Lewisham that August in 1977. I'd first like to introduce our first speaker, Dr. William Les Henry, who's at the end there. Dr. William Les Henry, who is an activist, a writer, and public speaker, who was born in Lewisham Hospital and grew up in the area. Dr. Henry is also known as Leslie Lyric. He is one of the pioneering British reggae dancehall DJs and has performed both nationally and internationally. Currently, he's an associate professor of criminology and sociology at the University of West London, and again has written and spoken around the world on many of the concerns faced by people of African ancestry, as well as addressing wider issues and social injustice. He's a Hong Ken five animal Shaolin Kung Fu instructor and is a first dan in Kyokushin-ai full contact karate. Sorry if I didn't do that last bit justice. So yeah, please come up and share what you have to say to us today.
Greetings, everyone. Greetings, good morning. Yeah, let's wake up. Yeah. And first, thanks to the Broccoli Society for inviting me this year. I did hear about it last year, but I think I was invited last year, but I couldn't make it, whatever. But and just to clear up the end, I'm a Shaolin Kung Fu practitioner. I teach five animals, Hong Ken five animals Kung Fu. Usually I'm teaching it now, so it's probably why I'm going to have a lot of energy, at least for 10 minutes. And I also practice Kyokushinkai, full contact knockdown karate. It's just the way I am. Now, you will see the significance of that when we go on this little journey. And I hope everybody is going to appreciate today in the spirit it's intended, because 1977 was a seminal moment in race relations in the UK. What happened in New Cross changed the racial dynamic across the UK, because it was the first time that the National Front were stopped from marching. And for many of us who grew up in this area, I was born in Lewisham Hospital with my twin brother. We grew up in Lewisham, actually went to this college twice. We used to come down here from Samuel Pepys School to do typing. That was probably early 70s. And then I came back to Lewisham College in the 80s to do a BA in business studies, I think it was. All right, eh?
Yeah,
that's good. Okay. So I've been asked to talk about, refresh here, victimization and persecution. And there's one thing I want to just explain before we go any further. And this is something I say to my students, especially my criminology students. I said to them, you have to understand the difference between victimization and injustice, because I don't think they're the same thing. Let's say, for instance, which just happens to be true, if you are a black person, say of African ancestry or however we want to call ourselves, and you are my age, I'm 60 years old, you will have gone through all forms of racial injustice and victimization and persecution. It was part and parcel of our existence. However, if we know that this system, because before we go anywhere about the National Front or whatever, we have to understand that this society is inherently racist, sexist, and classist, and it's been that way for at least 400 years, I would humbly suggest. This is when we started to get a system that was built around perpetuating various types of inequality. This is the system we have. So let's say, for instance, you're a black youth right now, 2017, you're walking down the road, you know you are 8-9 times more likely to be stopped and searched than a black white youth. We know this for a fact. Now, this dynamic is probably the same as when I was stopped. I met somebody recently who said they were stopped by the police, I don't know, 50 times or something. That was just regular for us. We were used to being stopped by the police all the time. But the point that I'm making is, if the system is supposedly just, i.e. everybody gets the same treatment, yet we have police officers who are racist and they will persecute you or victimize you because you are black, then that means that is victimization. That is not injustice. The reason why it's not injustice is because the system is supposedly just. The context of who you are, living in the skin as an African person, means you are being victimized just for being that. Therefore, when you go through the process, the legal justice system, and Esther is far better than me to speak about this, you're already snookered. Because the system is there to supposedly weigh up your innocence or guilt. You were innocent. The police may know you were innocent, and you got that treatment. Now, why this is significant is because for us in 1977, loads of the police, especially in Deptford Police Station, Lewisham Police Station, Forest Hill Police Station, were overtly and openly racist. They didn't hide it. They didn't have to hide it. They would even say to you, yeah, you know, come down there and we'll get some of our boys to get you. Especially if you went down past Clifton Rise to where that, is it the Dewdrop pub or whatever the hell it's called? Some pub down there. Dewdrop Inn. They would say that, yeah, come down on a Friday, we'll see you zoo. And this would be the same police you would see would be attacking you on the street. So my point is this. If you want to understand what happened in the Battle of Lewisham and you want to understand it in the context of victimization and persecution, you have to understand that for me, the police were complicit in what was happening to peoples of African ancestry, black people. This just happens to be true, because if they wasn't, we wouldn't have faced what we faced on a regular basis. The crucial point is, and this is why martial arts is important to me, in 1972, I used to go to the Moonshot Youth Club. So that was set up by Miss Sybil Phoenix. Most of you will know her through the through the Miss Phoenix Home for Girls and stuff like that. But she was the person who opened up Moonshot Youth Club to give peoples of African ancestry, because that's what we called ourselves then, or black people, whatever, a safe space, a community space. But ironically, it was right in the middle of probably one of the most racist parts of Lewisham Borough, where it is down Pagnell Street, surrounded by Childers Street, and you had Coldblow Lane, Millwall Football Ground, etc., etc. So when we went to Moonshot as 15-year-olds, 14-year-olds, or maybe a little bit older, they introduced us to Shotokan karate. Okay? Now, you could do Black History Studies, and I know Kwame knows what I'm talking about. You could do Black History Studies on its own. We used to call it, was it Black Studies or something? When people like Trojan and Patrick Berry and people like that ran it. It was Black Studies, wasn't it? Something like that. We called it Black Studies. However, you couldn't do karate without doing Black Studies. You could do Black Studies on its own. And there was a reason for that, because the reason why we were being introduced to Shotokan karate at 15 is because we were being attacked by white men. We could fight boys all day long. We fought them at school. I went to Samuel Pepys School, probably one of the most racist schools, because it had a high concentration of blacks, but there were more whites, and half of them came from the estates. So we were being introduced to Shotokan karate to protect ourselves from white men, because that's who we were being attacked by. So I don't want people to think that what happened in the so-called Battle of Lewisham popped out of a vacuum and didn't have a context. Just like one of the things that, and this is on Nikhail's film, and I say this on the film, for many of us, we went to the Battle of Lewisham on that day in August 1977. We went there to observe. We went there to say, let the white man then fight the white man today. Let's see what's going to happen today. So you will find that a lot of the black youth from Lewisham and those surrounding areas, we just stood outside Goldsmiths College and watched a lot of what was going on. Because we made a strategic decision. We're always fighting these people. There's nothing new. We're used to being attacked by them. We're used to being chased by people with motorbike chains. I ride a motorbike now. Now I realize how heavy a motorbike chain is. You know how much times I nearly got hit with them kind of things? Many of us used to get licked with that. They used to ride past on their bikes and hit you with the chain and stuff like that. So when we're talking about victimization or persecution or whatever, let's think about it in this context. And that is, we can speak about social justice, we can talk about what's happened, all the great inroads, etc., etc. However, the wake-up is Brexit, because it's emboldened the rife racists again. They are now in that, for me, it's almost put us back into that kind of febrile atmosphere that was around in the 70s. That's where I think we are now. So if there's one thing I would like us to take from today, is the fact that this is real. This isn't just a commemoration of something that happened 40 years ago and everything's fine now. It's actually getting qualitatively worse. Speak to a lot of the black young people. They speak a lot about black-on-black violence and black-on-black crime, but a lot of them youths know that they have to actually walk around in those so-called gangs for their own safety, because there are other things coming in. Where I live in Greenwich, if you go even down the road to places like Welling, you see that this emboldened, these rife racists are being emboldened again. And because for me, it's because nothing has qualitatively changed since 1977. You can pay lip service to the criminal justice system or the police services or whatever, and community representatives, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but the qualitative changes haven't occurred. If they had, black youth would not be getting stopped disproportionately, we would not be overrepresented in the criminal justice system, we would not be overrepresented in the mental health system, etc., etc., etc. The day when we're not having those conversations, something would have changed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Liz. So our next speaker is Dr. John Price, who is a social and cultural historian at Goldsmiths University of London, specialising in 19th and 20th century British history, the history of London and people's history. August 13, 2017, marked, as we know, the 40th anniversary of protests and disturbances in New Cross and Lewisham, which has become known as the Battle of Lewisham. John organised an impressive series of events for Goldsmiths to remember, commemorate, and evaluate the 1977 events, and to try to situate them into the contemporary context of the 21st century London. So, Dr. John, if you'd like to come up.
Yeah, start with two things. One, I'm just getting over a cold, so I might have to cough off mic once in a while. And the second thing is, I was part of a team of people who were responsible for the events over the summer. That's not to disperse any of the responsibility for it. That's just simply to say that it wasn't just me doing it. You know, it was an impressive series of events, but it was made possible by a big team of people, or a small team of people, behind us. I wanted to approach the Battle of Lewisham from, as a historian. I wanted to, in some ways, put my political persuasions to one side, and to maybe, I wouldn't say to depoliticise the event, but as a historian, my job is to be as objective as possible and to approach the events being led by the evidence, being led by, oral histories, documentary histories, the physical spaces, and things like that. So I was drawn to the event initially probably maybe 10 years ago, long before I was at Goldsmiths. And I was interested in it because I was interested in left-wing protest movements in London and beyond. And I came to it through that avenue. And I was teaching modules on the history of popular protest in London, and it was something that featured in the teaching that I was doing to undergraduates and postgraduates. And then I came to Goldsmiths, and I realised that this, I suppose, sort of slightly abstract event that I'd been teaching took place, actually on the doorstep of our campus. And I suddenly started to put the geography together and realised that all the places that I'd been reading about and mapping out were actually, I hadn't realised perhaps quite the proximity. And it was about 2 years before the anniversary when we had an event as part of the Being Human Festival, which is like a national festival of the humanities. And we had a theme for that year. The Being Human theme was radical. We came up with the theme of Radical New Cross, and we put together a programme of events, and I was asked to do something around the Battle of Lewisham as a radical act in the local area, radical historical act. We put together a panel of speakers, including Les and some other people, and we had a really interesting discussion about what the Battle of Lewisham meant historically and in the contemporary context. And at the end of that event, we had about 60 people, I suppose, on a wet Sunday afternoon, which was impressive to see. And I threw an open question to the audience, which was that, in just under 2 years' time, it will be the 40th anniversary of the Battle of Lewisham. Do you think that we should be doing something for that? Do you think that we should be recognising that? And there was a resounding cheer from the audience that we should be. And that started this journey of thinking about what was the right thing to do, how best was it to approach this. We wanted to, my objectives really, I wanted to get some sort of permanent marker in the area of Deptford or New Cross or Lewisham, so that people could be reminded of this event, something that they could see, something that was there all the time, that would prompt discussion, it would prompt people to think about these events. So we knew we wanted to have something that was going to be a permanent marker, and over time that developed into this, the recognition element of the project, which was to have the Lewisham Maroon plaque put up.
Excuse me.
And I'll talk about that a little bit more. I'm not going to talk too much about the history. Again, one of the other things we wanted to do was to disseminate the research that we'd found. Public engagement is such an important part of what we can do as an academic. And public engagement is a two-way conversation. It's not just dissemination. It's not just taking your information out to the public. It's about engaging the public and asking them to feed in. And that was such a central part of what we did. It was about talking to people who had been there, talking to people who remembered it, talking to people in the community who perhaps hadn't been there but remembered it for other reasons. And all of that has been fed into the exhibition panels, which are over on the left-hand side. The idea of these really is they come out to events like this. They go into schools, they go into clubs, they go wherever anybody wants to take them. And you can just, you know, lift them up, put them out, people look at them. So I'm not going to talk too much about the actual history. So we wanted to commemorate. We wanted to have a permanent marker. And that's not necessarily a badge of, you know, something happened here. It is designed to be an opening to conversation. It's a stimulation to make people stop, look at that, think, I didn't know that happened here. I now need to find out more. And again, we're working on website presence and various different resources so that this can go out to schools, it can go out to colleges. But people can be inspired to find out more about it. That was the purpose of the purple or the maroon plaque. The maroon plaque was unveiled on the exact 40th anniversary of the Battle of Lewisham on 13th of August 2017. And it's on Clifton Rise. If you know Clifton Rise, you've got the venue on one side and the New Cross Inn on the other, and it's on the wall there. And it's a permanent fixture. It will be there for as long as it lasts. Yeah, this is a permanent fixture. It's a proper Lewisham maroon plaque supported by the by Lewisham Council and the Mayor. So that was one thing we wanted to do, which we succeeded in. The other thing I wanted to do as a historian was I wanted to widen the narrative. What struck me when I was teaching about the Battle of Lewisham was when I was referring my students to things that they should read, I was referring them to things like Dave Renton's account of the Anti-Nazi League, Dave Widgery's accounts of working, the Anti-Nazi League, Rock Against Racism, books about Rock Against Racism, Joan Adimado's book about, you know, The Longest Journey, which actually just, you know, the Battle of Lewisham is a very small part of that study. And what occurred to me was that there was a dominant male white activist narrative that had run through this story over the years. And whenever I was referring students to resources to read, I realised that what they were getting was one perspective, which, for whatever reason, had become a dominant narrative about that event. And it struck me that what we needed to do was not to dispel that, not to say that that those people weren't a key part of what happened on that day. They weren't a key part of organising it, because they were, and they were a key part about bringing people together. But other narratives had been marginalised. Other narratives had been pushed to one side or had just been neglected. And my job as a historian was to widen that viewpoint again, was to try to encompass all those different viewpoints. And I think we initially thought that the anniversary would be the end of that process, that we would work up to the anniversary, we would have our celebrations, commemorations, we would launch our project, and then we would sort of, yeah, metaphorically pat ourselves on the back and move on to other things. And actually what it's become is that has become a starting point, not a finishing point. And the dialogues that we started on those days and the people who came up to me and said, I have never heard about this before. Why have I never heard about this before? Why has my story been marginalised? And this was predominantly the black community. And they were coming to me and saying, yeah, this is not taught in our schools. This is not taught to our children. This is the sort of stuff that Les was talking about. And there was this, you know, sort of a passion, but also an anger why is this not known? Why is this narrative not been told? And I think that's part of my role as a historian now, is to take this story forward and to show that it was a multifaceted event. And I know from talking to Les and other people that, you know, some of the young black kids there that day were there to stand and watch. But I've also had, you know, people from white activist backgrounds say to me, I was a hardened campaigner. I had been on demo after demo after demo for many, many years, and I had never seen as many black faces in the crowd that day as I'd seen anywhere else. And we need to ask, you know, why. We need to explore why that is the case. What was motivating people? What brought those people together? And what did it mean for, I mean, we talk on the exhibition about this being a seminal moment in race relations in London, and how it I do believe it changed things. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm in agreement that we don't live in a perfect world, and we haven't, that process is a long, long way off being what we'd want it to be. But it did fundamentally change things that day. And I think it did when people stood side by side on the streets and all realised that, yes, there were things that divided them, but I think on that day, when people looked around in the crowd, they actually started to realise that perhaps there were things that united them more than divided them. And there was a coming together. And that was the building of some bridges and the building of some ideas. So to conclude, really, for me as a historian, it's about getting as close to... I'm not a seeker of the truth. As a historian, I don't look for the truth. What I look for is to try to tell the widest, most accurate narrative that I can. And I think we're some way towards doing that, but we've still got some way to go. And what I need really now is for people to feed the information into the project. So I'm going to be in the breakout room and that. So if you want more information about what we're doing, please do let me know. And if anybody has any oral histories, anything like that, just feed them in. Thank you.
Thanks ever so much, John. So, yeah, as John said, we're going to take questions and answers about maybe 5-10 minutes in here, and then we're going to move into another room. I think it's 316, just out there, so if people want to stay for a bit longer. So next up is poet Mark Mr. T. Thompson, who is a poet, a teacher, and workshop facilitator. Broccoli born and bred, both his mother and stepdad were on the demonstration in 1977. So when he heard about the event to mark the 40th anniversary, he decided to turn the tale into a verse.
Good morning. Broccoli born and bred, living on Tresillian Road for the last 30-something years. It's really nice to be here in this context. I am a poet and a teacher, as was said, and I do have a poem specifically on this. But I think the key for me, I kind of didn't realise I was a historian. I kind of hadn't clocked that I was a historian. I was sort of chronicling and putting into context my events and my experiences. And it was kind of only when you look back at what you've done, you realise that you've been being a historian and you've been putting things into context. And that key word for me is about context. And Les touched on, I think he mentioned the police being complicit in what was going on. I'd go further. I would say that the reason that they came here to New Cross, to Lewisham, was directly in response to the police operation that preceded which was given the acronym PNH, and police officers were quite happy to tell black people to their faces that this stood for Police Nigger Hunt. They were happy to tell that to people's faces. They didn't feel that that was something that would cause a problem. And as a result of what seemed at the time from, you know, I ended up doing research into this. I knew about the events because my family, my people were there, but I didn't know what had preceded it till I decided I was, you know, I met John at the at Lewisham People's Day at what my wife would call the boring stalls. I saw this bit of history. I was like, I really need to go and talk to this person because this was part of my life. And although I was only 4 in 1977, it was something that I was very aware of having happened and being a significant moment. And having met John and spoken to him and been asked to perform at an event, I needed to put some of these things into context. And when I found out about the way that the police had kicked in people's doors at 6 o'clock in the morning in the way that you would expect them to treat terrorists, in the way that they were treating IRA terrorist cells, to deal with crime that was occurring on our streets, and that the mass media was describing black young men who did commit crime as muggers. This concept of muggers almost didn't exist before that. We had pickpockets, we had thieves, we even had robbers, but muggers was something that was attributed to a group of young black men, and the way in which they were treated and the way in which people behaved towards them was specific to the time. I'm sure there are probably people on the panel who know even more about this stuff than I do, but I had to go and find out. And our young people are having to go and find out. And as somebody, I published my first book of poetry in 2009 and did my first Black History Month related workshop in the Learning Resources Centre downstairs, around the corridor. And I've been working around the fringes of this field for a really long time. But it is all about context and understanding that the way that PNH led to a bunch of people being arrested, a bunch of headlines that were associating Lewisham and New Cross with muggings and there being an issue with race relations, directly attracted the National Front to bring their march to Lewisham. That's how they ended up here. But otherwise, they might have found some other place where they thought that they could cause offence. And these things have still been happening. It's only a year or two ago that there was an attempt to have a National Front march to the mosque in Lewisham. They look for places that they think they can sow discord. And if we don't stand together, they're very good at that. It's really important that we put these things into context. But I'm a poet, and I wanted to share two poems, one that kind of gives you a context of me and then the piece that's specific to this. Let me do some poems because that's why I'm here. It's not the greatest of performance spaces, but we'll work with this. I'm not used to having a great big block in front of me. I sweep all of that out of the way.
You've got a mic to wander around with?
We can do that.
Okay. In this space, I could probably do without this, but I suspect somebody's trying to record, so I will. I'll tolerate. But in that case, I don't need to stand down here. Okay, let's break that fourth wall. Yes, I went to drama school. That's the joys of the Albany in Deptford. That's context again. So the one that introduces me is this one, and it's called Cultural Chameleon, and hopefully it goes almost exactly like this. I am a cultural chameleon. A lyrical social comedian, I felt I had no choice but to change my voice to appear average by mean, maud, or a median. I've studied hard to fit in and be cool for as long as I've been able to speak, although not to stand out at my school, I had to learn a talk common, not Latin or Greek. Me have to pick up my patois in conversation many darker than me did too, because if you're not first generation, it might not come naturally to you. I have delved deep in all sides of my history, something I believe every person should do, because if where you come from's a mystery, can you be sure that your heading is true? So to stories of Romans and Boudicca, I add Maroons, Garvey, and Shaka Zulu, and ensure the light of the Lady of the Lamp never obscures Mary Seacole from view. My biological heritage is both Black and British, and yet some really do seem to feel that my need to pay subs to both these cultural clubs is somehow less than real. Like some BNP or National Front, jumped up runt of an Enoch Powell-influenced ignorant grunt who wants us all to go back to our historically correct geographical homes. But hold on. That's split by over 5 hours of time, and that's a little harder to straddle than a couple of travel card zones. Forget that this Patriot's Queen is Franco-German. The suggestion of this lunatic is the place I should feel most at home in is floating somewhere over the mid-Atlantic. One toe down in London town, the other in Kingston, poor wretch. Better put me on the rack right now, come my legs, them just won't stretch. My left side is waiting for my breakfast scene when my right side's just had me lunch. I guess if I'm confused, stuck in between, I could always just do brunch. But from that lofty spot, I could appreciate many artists that have shaped our current worldview. Great bards from Tuff Gong to Billy Wagadaga, known as Marley in Shakespeare to you. The Windrush might appear through time's missed to me. As it answered the mother country's call, those aboard unbowed by their history, each one with a right to stand proud and tall. Slave routes back to Africa would be visible too, a journey so many did not survive. Britannia's involvement is shameful, it's true, but I'm so proud that I am alive, for my DNA's very existence is a testimony to my ancestors' persistence and my parents' tolerance, even when surrounded by overwhelming ignorance. It is a unique blend of Aboriginal British bloodlines and those of the invited immigrants. So yes, I am a cultural chameleon, a lyrical social comedian, and now, by choice,
I changed my voice to appear more than average by mean, mode, or median.
Thank you.
I could have spent, oh Lord, time up. And I didn't get to do the... Intolerance not wanted. It's about 2 minutes, so I'll do it as quick. I could have spent 10 minutes talking about this one poem, but I'm not. I'm going to deliver the poem, and you'll have to look at the history and ask questions to find out how it's relevant if you don't know, because, yeah. An anti-muggers march called by mugs who wanted to spread hate. August 13th in 77, history demands we mark the date when Southeast London screamed out for black and white to unite and fight. Ensuring wrong'uns on the right would never again be so bold or bright. The backward front was in for one hell of a surprise. They'd find Clifton was a hill up which they just couldn't rise. So behind brown boy hunting boys in blue and baton-wielding horsemen, on Achilles, this most dishonourable guard wheeled to come again. But the locals stood firm, even with kids in our front rank. So today, us youngers need to give it up and show some thanks to those old boys and girls who got up, stood up, and who never come for plea. The beating heart of Lewisham who pogo skanked to block the way. Some will tell you that we rioted, and they're not entirely wrong, but we would not be quieted. We faced up proud and strong, landing one thump on fascism's glass chin. Sure, we fought with the law, but the law couldn't win because these are our streets and this is our home, where from the cradle we're rocked by our beats and mock racists who still fear on these roads to roam. You see, what happened on this day is, as one, our people made it clear. Intolerance, listen up. Unu are not welcome here. Thank you.
That's superb. Thanks so much, Mark. So now we have the wonderful Nikhil Kanot, who is a filmmaker, who Les made a reference to the film that she made. So she's originally from Lewisham and a recent graduate. She studied MA in documentary filming at Goldsmiths University of London. Nikhil is interested in creating diverse content that addresses race, migration, and cross-cultural diversity in the UK.
Good morning. Thank you to the Broccoli Society for inviting me. I just want to talk a bit about like the reason why I made the film and kind of came to the idea. And I guess like the title of my speech is kind of about unheard voices. So yeah, I was studying at Goldsmiths. I recently finished my BA in art and philosophy at Reading, and I kind of came to this idea of thinking about my cultural identity, having studied abroad in Canada and getting this kind of confusion about why I was kind of British and black and being called African-American even though I was British. So I started kind of looking more into my heritage. That was in my third year of my undergraduate. So I came back and I started researching that and making artwork that was about that. And I found that film was the most effective way to do that. So I thought the master would really help me continue to explore those ideas. So coming into the master's, yeah, like I said, I'd already started to investigate kind of like race, thinking about where I've come from in Lewisham originally, and looking at kind of like my grandparents' story through like the kind of Windrush generation. And then I kind of tried to strip it back a bit more and start to think about like why these things were occurring during those times, and really kind of wanted to capture that in the film. So the film's titled The Battle of Lewisham, and I'm kind of investigating about kind of how it was for black people, specifically black men, during that time. And it kind of goes through kind of a timeline of how it all started and the day, and then kind of like this lack of knowledge that we have amongst the community, because during making the film, I started to realise that I was speaking to people. I just went along the New Cross Road where it happened, and I would just speak to people and say, like, oh, I'm making a film about the Battle of Lewisham, and they would just look at me as if that was something they had never heard of. So I was really interested in why this piece of history was kind of, like, blocked from the community and why only a certain type of person might know about it. So especially for the younger generation, I really kind of wanted to make a film that could kind of be referenced as this kind of, like, significant moment in history. And I think initially going into it, I thought it was kind of a moment in Black British history, and I still would reference it as such. However, having speaking to Les, and he mentions in the film that it was a significant moment just for people power in general, because if you look at some of the archive, you do see that there was a mixture of people, predominantly white people, that were there fighting against the National Front. So, I kind of just wanted to make the piece so it would really kind of do the day justice in a way, and be something, again, that I think that the youth of today could look at. And my main issue in terms of representation about local history is very much underrepresented in our community. And I really think that it's kind of the pinnacle of kind of systematic discrimination is a lack of education, a lack of knowledge, and keeping these kind of local histories from children, from members of society, is how these kind of, like, institutions can continue to block out what happens and block out the past. So hopefully, if you guys have got the time to pop and see the film, you will kind of see, like, what I've tried to do with it. So I think, yeah, we're in one of the breakout rooms afterwards. And if you have any questions or want to know any more information about the film, I'm happy to speak about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Nicole's film will be shown at 2:45 in room 312, which is just across the way. I think that's the better door to use. And so she'll be there to sort of introduce the film and then take questions and answers. Okay, so now our last speaker in this section is Esther Stamford Corsay, who is a jurist consult and community advocate specialising in critical legal practice of law as resistance, internationally acclaimed reparationist and PhD candidate researcher in history. Esther also serves as the co-chair of the Pan-African Reparations Coalition in Europe, which is called PARCO for short, the official spokesperson for the African Emancipation Day Reparations March Committee, which organises the annual 1st August Reparations March in London, and co-initiator of the Stop the Manganese, We Charge Genocide and Ecocide petition and its campaigns. So if you'd like to come up and speak.
Greetings, everyone. Okay. I was a small child when the Battle for Lewisham happened. I was actually about 5 years old. And so my comments are really speaking to the aftermath and how we kind of do some of this remembrance and this kind of critical evaluation today in terms of what is the legacy of the Battle for Lewisham and what can we take from this history in terms of challenging similar issues today. So my comments are focused around the theme in looking at the aftermath of Afrophobia, the continued Manganese legacy of the unfinished business of fighting fascism within and beyond Lewisham. Afrophobia is a term that many of you probably will not be familiar with. It is a relatively new term to describe an old phenomena, and to denote the key specific forms of global racism which people of African ancestry and descent have experienced. Afrophobia is a means of identifying prejudice, therefore, directed at a particular group, those being people of African descent, which dehumanizes the group, denies our humanity, our dignity, and our personhood. It therefore describes the hostility, antipathy, contempt, and aversion expressed directly and through institutional as well as legal means towards people of African descent or who are part of the African diaspora. It manifests itself, for example, as verbal abuse, spatial segregation, physical attacks, as well as systematic racial discrimination within areas such as employment, housing, education, and so forth. So in terms of looking at Afrophobia as a continued Ma'angamizi legacy, I also have to explain what Ma'angamizi means. It's a key Swahili term that basically means a Holocaust. So we use it to describe what's known as the African Holocaust, which includes chattel enslavement, colonialism, neo-colonialism, genocide, and also the legacy of racism. And in particular, we don't just refer to racism as a general thing, because there are specific types of racism that affect particular communities. And that's one of the understandings that was put forward and generated at the 2001 World Conference Against Racism that took place in Durban, South Africa, where there was a recognition of, you know, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, anti-Roma discrimination, anti-black racism, Afrophobia in particular as a specific form of anti-black racism. So when I'm thinking about the battle for Lewisham and this fight against so-called fascism, we have to also explore what is fascism, simply being a regime of terror. And many of the victims of the fascism that was occurring then, and also the fascism that's occurring now, often endure this reign of terror in silence. And it's those that seem to resist and don't accept the status quo that get the worst treatment. And I would say, as a person of African heritage, who may be classified as black British by some, but that's not how I define myself, I would say that part of the legacy has been the failure to recognize this group of people that I belong to recognize our specific histories of struggle and resistance, and also what this event meant to us then and what it means to us now when we look back. So we focus on 1977, but what about what happened afterwards, the New Cross Fire, and the way that sort of institutional neglect also impacted on our community? And at the time, reports from black commentators, black community commentators, were saying, well, this event, that not the Battle for Lewisham, but the New Cross Fire, was part of the signalling of a black British identity and community. And I would say now, all these years later, there is also a development or evolution, or if you like, revolution in terms of going back to a notion of not just a black community identity, but also a wanting to identify with Africa and everything that means. And some of you may or may not know that we're in actually a United Nations decade for people of African descent that began in 2015. And so one of the things that the decade has basically been pushing for is that we need to recognize people of African descent, in some of whom will be classified as black British or see themselves as black British. There needs to be justice, and there also needs to be development. So this is part of the aftermath, that the struggle for some of the communities who are classified as black has moved on. There's a lot more thinking now. There's a lot more analysis as to what the specific issues are. So therefore, we cannot reduce fascism simply to Hitlerite Nazism. And there must be a recognition of the fascistic essence of European and domestic manifestations of racist oppression of non-European groups, which isn't often understood. And one of the people that I think encapsulated this very well was Frantz Fanon, who said, when we revolt, it's not for a particular culture. We revolt simply because for many reasons we can no longer breathe. And this notion of not being able to breathe has been popularized in the USA in relation to killings. And we also have these killings, deaths in police, prison, and psychiatric custody that are very much a contemporary legacy and part of this aftermath. And I think that's where, in my concluding comments now, I really want to elevate campaigns such as the struggle for reparatory justice, which many people misunderstand and simply think that when some of us use the term reparations, we're just talking about money and compensation, but actually compensation is only one aspect of reparations under international law. It basically is a holistic remedy that includes measures of restitution, compensation, rehabilitation of groups and communities that have experienced massive violations of their human and their people's rights, satisfaction, as well as measures of non-repetition and a cessation of those violations. So the fact that racism still exists today and is increasing, especially as we're heading to Brexit, is an indication that reparatory justice is something that we all need to understand. We need to dialogue about, we need to have those critical conversations as to what would that look like in Lewisham. And those who have been involved in this history making of the battle for Lewisham, how in touch have you kept with the black community struggles, the struggles of people of African heritage and ancestry, whether they were born here, whether they came out of the Caribbean, or whether they came directly from the continent of Africa? And that's one of the things that I think is part of the legacy. There's been a kind of silencing, minimalizing also of our histories of resistance and struggle. And one of those movements that I think is gaining more recognition now, especially since in 2014 the Caribbean governments decided that they were going to also champion reparatory justice, is the reparations movement and what that is about. And that is part of the legacy. And in particular, in closing, I would just highlight the Stop the Mangamizi We Charge Genocide Ecocide campaign. You can't really see it very well, but we've got this colourful postcard, which is a letter postcard to MPs, that gives manifestations of the aftermath for black communities of African heritage and ancestry in particular. So what's happening around school exclusions? What's happening around dispossession and land grabs, not only in Africa and the Caribbean, but also gentrification here in the UK context? Brixton is a key example of what's going on. Racial violence, racist immigration policies, school-to-prison pipeline, for instance, police brutality, the list goes on. So how do you relate as people who see yourselves as social justice, global justice advocates? How do you relate to this struggle for reparatory justice and how we all actually work within a reparations context to transform Lewisham, the rest of the country, and in fact be part of the global transformation of the world is going to be key in going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much to all our really brilliant speakers. We now have to move from here because we've got our next theme starting. But if people do want to, in fact, we're going to take a, can we take questions and okay. So we can take three questions. What we'll do is we've got one mic. If you can, we'll get the questions first. If you can say your name and the organisation you're from, if it's relevant, and state who your question is for,
We'll just take three questions and then we can move on to the other room if people want to ask more. So put your hand up if you have a question, please. So there's one here. Okay. Lovely. So, so there's only one question? Oh, good. Okay. There's three questions. Okay.
Sorry, where was it?
Lovely. Thank you. So the first one is here, the chap here. If you can put your hand up, please. Thank you.
Hi, so if you could give...
Hello again. Is it afternoon yet? Not quite. 30 minutes to midday. Thank you all very much for your time today. Everyone who's here, it's a wondrous, wondrous morning, and it will be an afternoon shortly too. I am coming here personally. I have a relationship with this borough for 13 years, so I am a voting citizen, and I'm also a professional in other kinds of areas, in fact, very many. However, this is an event that is required, I believe. It is so positive, and it's a pleasure to be here and to have it so well organised. So we thank those again. But the question I want to ask is, after a wonderful start today, after an amazing appearance by a young mayoress, I feel a kind of tension and a kind of toxicity, a kind of poison and venom in the atmosphere. I'm very sensitive and intuitive. I'm also a poet and a writer. I'm also a martial artist of 45 years experience. And I haven't heard the word, I heard P-I-E-C-E, which is peace, but I didn't hear the word peace, P-A-C-E. If we believe and we are unique and different, we should be colour blind rather than focusing on our difference, but how we can be together in harmony, like nature. We all breathe the same air, we have the same physique, we have the same organs, and we belong on the same planet. We breathe, each one of us, through the same process, and also we live on the same planet in the same universe.
So the question is,
what is it that we can do to be at peace and in harmony?
Wonderful, thank you. Is that aimed at everyone?
Oh,
okay,
here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any other question?
Hello, this is for John Price. I understand that. Sorry, it's me. My name's Fred. I understand that you might have had some issues with the putting the plaque up with the Lewisham police. I just wondered if you could mention that.
Are we taking all the questions?
Oh, yes, there's one more and then we'll...
Hello, I'm Sophia Mangara. I'm from Broccoli, but I've been living here for many years. I was actually at Battle of Lewisham at the age of 17. I was very active in terms of anti-racism and have continued since then. I'd like to ask the panel, I'm sorry I've missed some of your talks, but I have heard and seen some of the films and discussions before. How are you... You talk about getting people involved, and I think the young are the ones that are most crucial in an area, because I went around talking to people in the local community, the shops and the streets, asking them whether they knew about the Battle of Lewisham and also the anti-racist struggle since, and a lot of them haven't. And we do need to engage in them. So I'm wondering, how are you engaging with them and how can we work together? Because I think it's not just a black-white issue, it's an issue for everybody to attack racism, and especially now with xenophobia and Islamophobia and the division of our communities, is what they're trying to do. So how will you get the young people engaged and how can we work together?
Do you want me, if I answer the question about the plaque, and then that'll be, I can do that. So at People's Day, when we met, I met Mark at People's Day, we were there, and three police constable, or WPC, and two PCSOs came to the stand where we had the exhibition. And they were looking at it, and they came to me, one of the PCSOs, who they were both young men, and this older WPC. And they came to me, and they were quite concerned about some of the ways that police had, what they perceived the way that we were projecting the police. And they said to me, so you're doing this big thing in a few months' time about the Battle of Lewisham, and are you going to be promoting that the police were responsible for this? Are you going to be blaming the police for this? And I said to them, it's not for me to blame anybody, but I will be explaining what happened. And as part of that, yes, I will be highlighting the role that the police played. And they started to get, within the remit of being a PCSO at a public event, they started to get as sort of pushy as I suspect they felt they could. And they said, oh, well, you know, a lot of bad things are said, and yeah, you really need to get to the root of everything. And I think they were just conscious that we were. And I said to them, you know, but you need to accept. And this is when the WPC stepped in. And she sort of said, yeah, I'm of an age where I know what it was like. And she said, you know, it's important that there is a dialogue about this. And she was telling them as much as, you know, we were, me and her were sort of trying to tell them that you know, back then, in inverted commas, you know, that we were going to say, as Mark has highlighted, Les highlighted, you know, what was actually happening. We were trying to highlight that. And she was quite sort of open to that and sort of saying that we need to have a dialogue about that and it needs to come out. And the more we talked, the more you could see that we weren't necessarily attacking them as individuals now, but we were being honest about what had happened, and we were being honest about the cultures in the policing at that time. And I think they sort of went away not that much more comfortable. We also had an issue with the council who wanted to promote the plaque and wanted to support the plaque and the mayor's office, but were very cautious about having the words battle. They said to me, are you commemorating a riot? And I said, no, of course. Why? Yeah, of course I'm not commemorating a riot. And it was supposed to be put into kind of, we did discuss putting it in inverted commas, but somehow that didn't make it onto the final version. So it just does say, but I think it's about context, exactly what Mark was saying. It is about understanding that that's what the press called it at the time. It's what people referred to it as at the time. Lots of other things, but they certainly referred to it. The front pages of the national newspapers the next day had the Battle of Lewisham on them, and that's how people at the time knew about it, and that's why we used it. And it's historical context. It's a contextual term. I'm not saying that that's what it should stand for. I'm a historian. That's my role. So does that, I think, answers the question. And I'm going to hand that on to whoever wants to talk.
So we'll go with Mark's question. What can we do to create peace and harmony?
I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer this, but I will answer it. What we can do is we can listen for a start. We can listen to what people have been saying for generations. We can stop trying to shut down a conversation that is really about exposing the roots of inequality and injustice in this society and how it disproportionately still affects particular groups. Not to say that not all people can be oppressed, they can be, but as Les spoke about in his comments, the difference between persecution and victimization and so forth, we need to take that on board. Reparations is a healing remedy. It is, because it's about repairing the damage. And the damage, you can't just repair one group. We talk about, in the coalition I represent, we talk about pan-African reparations for global justice. It is about global justice. And we cannot have peace while people are still being dispossessed. People of African heritage are literally dying in the Mediterranean, as they did hundreds of years ago. So some of us cannot just sit by and do this kumbaya stuff. It doesn't work. And some of you may know that there was a report released by War on Want, done by white researchers, actually. Britain's New Colonialism spoke about the 101 companies registered on the London Stock Exchange that control $1 trillion worth of Africa's key mineral resources. So when we see so-called migrant crisis that's resulting in death and Africans being sold on auction blocks today in Libya, right before our very eyes, then this is part of the reason why there can be no peace. There can no be no peace without justice. And when we have the UK Prime Minister, Lord Ahmad, who's just come back from the Caribbean and has said, no, move on. This is part of the problem. We need to begin to listen.
Thank you. We are really running out of time. So did anybody else have anything they wanted to share about creating peace and harmony? I think the next session was supposed to start 11:25 and we really have pushed over the time now. So what we can do is we're now going to move to the whole panel and I are going to move to room 316. So please feel free, those who are interested, to come to 316 where we'll continue this for another 30 minutes or so. Okay, but if you could just put your hands together again for the panel, that's really good. Thank you.